Okay, well, we'll get started. Welcome everybody to the May 30th Solid Waste Commission meeting. We want to start off with introductions.
Sorry, are we recording?
We are recording.
Okay, we'll start with introductions. I'll go first, and then maybe we go left around the table. Is that clockwise? So Chad Euler, Clackamas County resident and commission chair.
Rick Winterhalter, county staff.
Julie Hamilton, I work for Clackamas County Public Health and commissioner.
Will Mathias, I'm the CFO for B&B Leasing here in Orange City.
Carlton Palmier, senior district manager for waste management.
Bill Potter, commissioner at large.
Kate Taylor, county staff.
Would you like to introduce the guests as well? Would you like them to introduce themselves?
Sure. It's just the folks in the room?
Yep.
Anyone else on? Okay. Sure. Let's do that.
I'll go ahead and start off. Yeah. Good afternoon. Dave Huber, public sector manager for WM.
And Dan Blue, government relations manager for Recology.
Sophie Richards, county staff. Beth Burgess Duncan, regional director at ORA.
Cindy Olmstead at Philwock, county staff.
Josh Brown, district manager for Waste Connections.
Chris Wright, site manager for Waste Connections.
Cheryl Bell, assistant director of development for transportation development and on the commission.
Ellen
Roglin, community relations specialist for transportation and development, and not on the commission, but happy to be here.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, everyone. I believe our next and first item to discuss is the annual collection system piece.
That is correct.
All right, Rick, do you want to leave that?
Sure. I can start off, and given the time, Chair Euler has limited time this afternoon, so I'll try to go through this fairly quickly and leave time for questions for everybody, but you have the report in front of you. Kind of the standard review that we do every year through the cooperation and participation of our collectors, and they put together, they spend a lot of time putting together a lot of data for us and many jurisdictions in the region to allow us to review them and to come up with whether there's a needed adjustment for fees. So the composites, after adjusting, as you can see in the report, kind of fall within our acceptable range of 8 to 10%. But we do know that we have some known and measurable increases that are coming up in costs. Those are disposal costs, labor contracts, recycling processing. We're seeing some changes there, and also some notable truck expenses. Disposal, the increase is primarily, we base our disposal fees off of Metro, which their disposal fees are the only publicly reviewed fees in the region, and so we use those for purposes of setting rates. And we are price takers. Our collectors are price takers when it comes to disposal costs, and so we have to assume whatever those increases are into our system. The increases on Metro's part this time around were largely operational. The regional system fee component did not change much at all. So they their rate review committee made the choice to move to a more of a cost of service model, and Metro is no longer using the reserves to subsidize the fees that they were charging. And they had some changes in personnel as well, moving into some more living wage jobs away from casual labor jobs and contracted work. So those factors kind of contributed to their increase. And recycling processing costs have been going increasing in the negative way. So the costs have been increasing. And so we've taken that into account The collectors send us information on a monthly basis, and we track those prices that they receive at the material recovery facilities, or that they are charged at the material recovery facilities. We also noted this time, I know the past couple of years we've been talking about truck expenses and delays in that supply chain coming in, and so, you know, these folks, businesses really try to keep that capital expenditure level as things go on, replacing trucks and, as you know, each and every year. And since the pandemic and a little bit before, we've seen delays in deliveries of trucks. So some trucks that were on that are still running and still very viable to run, but they've fallen off the depreciation schedule and they haven't. We haven't seen trucks come back on. So we're seeing some changes in those expenses, and we accounted for that in the proposal that's in front of you today. The attachment one kind of looks at carton containers and shows you kind of what will happen with a proposed increase, and the attachment, the second attachment, kind of shows what will happen if we, you know, decide not to do an increase that's proposed in front of you. And so you can see that we could fall below the range given the estimates that we've put forward. So the other item that we looked at was Dropbox, and we reviewed that with out disposal in the cost, because disposal is a pass-through and the fees that we're setting don't affect are on the collection aspect of the business. And so without the increase that we're proposing today, they will fall to the bottom of the range. They'll still be in the range on that, but so that's what we're proposing there. I have to own up to a mistake that I made in 2019. If you will look at the one table on the compactor fees, you'll note that there's a fairly sizable increase proposed, because in 2019 we hadn't had an increase in a while, and we put one on that was fairly large on the open drop boxes. Those fees should have carried on into the compactor class of service as well, and they did not. So I failed to get that on our fee schedule in 2019, and so now we're proposing that we catch up to that. We had each of the subsequent increases in the following years. They did get transferred and followed through, but kind of just saw it this year for some reason. I don't know how I missed it each and every year since. But that's what's happened. We put that out there where, well, let's go ahead and kind of rip the Band-Aid off and do the increase all this year. And I'll kind of leave that to you to decide. I'll just share the information there. There are probably less than 150 customers that will be affected by the increase that's proposed in front of you. And but that's for you to decide. We put that out there. So just let me know if you have any questions and about the report. Discuss how you'd like staff to handle that compactor increase, and I leave it to the commission to for their decision.
Thanks, I have a few questions, but before I ask mine, does anyone else in the room have any comments or questions they'd like to ask?
I have questions. That came to mind is, in your report, you said that the county franchise fees, the money going to the county and the franchisers, is remaining basically the same. Could you clarify how the franchise fees are assessed and how it is that they don't change?
Commissioner Potter, they will change, you know, relative to the increase that we're proposing. So the franchise fee is based on collection collection revenues. So all of the, so the, you know, the regular monthly, they go, then it's at 5%. So we get 5% of the collection revenues from the
So is that something that's stable over time as a fixed percentage?
It is.
Or is that various?
It is. And so the 4 to 6% increase on the, you know, on the total bill, the nickel that we get, you know, that is fairly small on the 5 cents that we get. So that's why we say it's relatively flat.
You want to say it doesn't go up and down with the, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, one other question. On the drop boxes, are those franchised by districts? I mean, let me see, is it the same companies that do the pickups doing the drop boxes in the same areas, or is that franchised separately?
It is, as you said, in the former. They each collector in each of their franchises provide the service for the containers, the carts, and the drop box, with one notable exception. Bliss Sanitary on the Mountain subcontracts with Waste Connections to handle that, their Dropbox service.
Because they don't have a Dropbox.
They don't have Dropbox.
Okay. Okay. I'm okay for now.
Here's one of the questions I had. It looks like the forecasted revenue, collection service revenue from our last meeting in 2023 to now has quite a delta. Is there anything happening in the county that we need to think about or consider in this that may have an effect on the fees that are collected? Is there like a service reduction? Is there, has some area been incorporated into a city somewhere that may change these forecasts?
Not that I'm aware of. There are annexations that happen occasionally, you know, but they're pretty small. There are some areas that are finding some redevelopment, kind of in the Happy Valley area, and any others? Kind of turn to you guys. I'm trying to think. Those are, that's the area I see growing most, where you'll get 100, 200 houses in an area. Is that my... getting to your question correctly?
Yeah, so maybe I'll try to state it more clearly. So I think there was a forecast for last year of like a little over 46 million, 46 and a half million, and the actual was like 43. So what might be causing that, like a $3 million collection fee delta? Because that I think ultimately is a pretty big driver around what is forecasted in terms of the revenue percentage and actual. At least that's what it looks like to me.
Mr. Chair, I would have to look into that a little further to better understand it. That's a great question.
Okay. So we'll make sure I get started.
No, that's fine. That's a good question. We work off of the, you know, the information that's provided to us, and yeah, but that's a great question.
Okay. So maybe a follow-up on that one.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. And then I'll add one more, Rick, since in the same vein. The disposal, so while the revenues were less than forecasted from last year, the disposal expenses were higher. And that also seems a little odd to me that, you know, it looks as if maybe the served population may be decreased, but if the revenue, if the disposal expenses increase, that maybe doesn't make sense. Anyway, it was just something that was interesting to me.
Okay.
And then the other question I had around the depreciation costs, are those included, or are those represented as truck expenses?
Yes.
Okay. And we don't know where we've just in the forecasted or estimated expenses for 2024. I'm assuming some approximate date was used for when those new vehicles would be put into service.
We did a survey of collectors and looked at those, and that, so what you see in and looked at that total number and then came up with a composite and divided it amongst the number of customers that were there for a six-month period. We know some of the trucks arrived in February and March, and others are anticipated in this in Q3 and 4 of this year, of 24, that we will be looking at, you know, next year. And so those may come in December. They may come in this month. So we don't know how much depreciation will be there, but we did that based on a six-month period. Does that answer that?
That makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
So it is an estimate.
Okay, and then I'm sorry, I don't have the number handy, but my last question. Metro increased their rates in 2023 somewhere between 12% and 15%. Is that correct, or was that a planned increase for July of 2024 that we're looking at currently?
You know, I don't have that in front of me right now, but my recollection is it was 14% last year. But
are there any other indications that you see, Rick, that would in 2020 that we'll see these double digit increases year over year? Any, you know, crystal ball for that?
No, to answer that question, I mean, I can share that. It's anticipated that the labor increases that came on this year and kind of drove some of that and some of the increase, and also getting to that living wage, and also getting to the cost of service, that increases should level out in the future, but I can't say for sure.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Does anyone else have any comments or questions around the proposed?
I can just add for you that the tip fee for 2024 was at 11.9%. So, for 2023 I grabbed the wrong. 11% for 2023, if that's what you're asking.
Okay.
Yeah.
14 was knocked around.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was 11, and then for this year it's 11.9.
Thank you.
Excuse me.
Okay.
Do you want public
comment now
or later? I see it's a separate agenda item. So.
We do. I forgot about that. Thank you. We do have public comment from the Aura representative. So if you wanted to hear that now, you can do that.
Yes, please. Let's do that.
All right, thank you. I am Beth Vargas Duncan, the Regional Director at Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association, and the Clackamas County Refuse and Recycling Association President, Cindy Rogers from Republic, unfortunately was not able to be here. She wanted to make this statement, but I said I could since she was not able to be here. So I will just quickly read her statement. Good afternoon, members of the Commission. I'm Beth Vargas Duncan, I already said that, and in that capacity, I'm representing Clackamas County Refuse and Recycling Association, whose members provide solid waste and recycling collection services for Clackamas County. Every Clackamas County hauler providing solid waste and recycling collection services is a member of CCRRA. That's our acronym we go by. Several of the CCRRA members are family companies, which is a point of pride in our industry. CCRRA members, many of whom are here, as you already heard, are committed to their service to the people of Clackamas County and to meeting rigorous standards for health and safety. This commitment has been seen and felt during COVID, ice storms, and wildfires. We've also been committed to our partnership with the county and this commission. Together, we have built an efficient and progressive franchise waste collection program that assures residents in the county have access to desired services no matter where they live. CCRRA's work reflects shared values with the communities we serve, including equity and environmental protections, and providing quality service to all residents at a reasonable cost. And this brings me to our topic for today, rate review. As you know, CCR members are highly regulated by the county, and each year we engage in a robust rate review process, which we support and is important for the integrity of the franchise system. And so the people of Clackamas County know they're getting a service at a rate that is fair. Through this process, CCRA worked cooperatively with the county, providing highly detailed financial information. The county's rate consultant reviewed the financial information and rates to determine the cost of the service and projecting known and measurable costs for the coming year. The haulers and the county staff collectively discussed calculations and projections, ensuring accuracy for both the haulers and the ratepayers. And we obviously all oversaw that, made the same miss that Rick is taking responsibility for in 2019. So I just want to say, I think we all share in that a bit. CCRA believes the rate review and setting process is fair with the right balance of independent review and transparency to assure reasonable rates for the haulers for their service and to the Clackamas County customers we serve. We ask that the Solid Waste Commission recommend the Clackamas County Board of Commissioners adopt the rates as presented by Clackamas County staff, and we look forward to partnering further in the future. The CCRA appreciates the opportunity to serve Clackamas County. And I'm available to answer any questions, as is anybody else here. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Amen. Okay, if anyone, unless anyone has any other comments, we can accept a motion or one of three options. Actually, bear with me here. Let me read those off. So option one is to maintain fees at current levels until 2025. In that scenario, the fee will fall below the 8 to 12% range. Option two, increase fees for cart, container, and drop box as proposed by staff effective July 1st, 2024. In this scenario, the estimated total composite will be within range. Option three, propose an alternative option. With that, would anyone like to motion for an option?
A motion. Motion to adopt option two, and I will allow staff to go ahead and read and make sure that that's properly worded.
So option two, increases fees for cart, container, and drop box as proposed effective July 1, 2024. In this scenario, the estimated 2024 total county composite will be within the range, slightly below the 10% target. And the recommendation would be, that would be the recommendation made to the Board of County Commissioners.
Okay, we have a motion to adopt the fees. We have a second. I'll second. Okay, motion and seconded. All in favor, raise your hands.
Aye.
Any opposed?
And one abstain.
We have one abstention.
Oh, sorry, I didn't see that. Thank you for clarifying. Okay. That, I believe, concludes the first item on the agenda.
It does. And I want to say to the commission and to Kate, thank you very much for all the help that you provided during this process. This was the first time that Kate participated, and she really kept things moving along and really appreciated all her efforts. So now she's going to kind of provide a little update on our the Recycle Plus program that Commissioner Potter has asked for on more than one occasion.
Thank you. Or did we want to do minutes first? Or do, okay. Sorry. Thank you for the introduction. I'm going to start with a little show and tell, because that's always fun. We're not too old for show and tell. So this is the Recycle Plus bin. To give an idea of what collectors came up with, right? And so there's the covered lid, and we collect a few primary materials in this. So I'm going to give you a brief summary here. So this program is an optional service for our urban customers, and folks can subscribe to it. And it offers curbside collection of materials with a fancy purple bin. And these materials include plastic film, clamshells, textiles, and compact fluorescent bulbs. And so it's funded through the cost of service, and unlike other programs, it doesn't require a subscription fee. So that's kind of the overarching kind of idea behind the program. And then it began in 2023. So initially, county staff did receive some calls as folks kind of settled in and wanted to set up service. And that's not surprising with a new program. And collectors quickly resolved issues and got that smooth sailing. So we haven't had any such calls in a number of months. Now the logistics are ironed out and folks are rolling along. In December 2023, we reached out to collectors with a questionnaire just to get a temperature check on how it was going. This is just kind of a summary of the questions that we asked and a summary of the responses. So first kind of main question was number and jurisdiction of customers and the number of completed pickups. And so it sounds like we're talking about 158 customers at that point in time in December 2023 and 212 pickups. And that's across Clackamas County, including cities. In terms of volume estimates, as a whole and by category, the volume is not always tracked, but cumulative volumes were generally minimal. In terms of the type of vehicle utilized for collection and whether the vehicle is a new purchase, nobody purchased a new vehicle for the program. And it sounds like folks are using a box or flatbed truck that was mentioned, but no new vehicles purchased. So that's good news. Location of sorting, storing, and final drop-off for these materials kind of varies. Some folks are actually sorting at the curb, others at their yard, others at the drop-off location, and some are storing material on site before they take it to a drop-off. And materials ultimately going to both Far West Recycling and KB Recycling. Some general comments from collectors with it. Customers were properly preparing materials, which was great to hear. One comment was that everything was going well. Also, some folks commented on a slow start, that not many folks were as interested. Some folks canceled shortly after starting just because they didn't have enough volume to keep going. Another collector reported that they did an email campaign and they boosted participation. So it was kind of across the board. Anecdotally, staff has heard that some jurisdictions have organized focused advertising efforts, but the increase in participation is not always what one would hope. Some efforts resulted in less than 20 increased participants. So the program continues to be an option for our urban community members. And at this time, we're looking at about less than 1% participation across the county, including the cities. But we're discussing next steps and looking at, you know, what is a good future option and how to kind of boost participation. Anybody have questions?
When you say the urban users, are you talking about urban, but not inside the cities?
These numbers include inside the cities.
Oh, they do? Okay. Because it's interesting, because it seemed kind of low after all that controversy with Ridwell that we went through in the last few years. Quite an outcry that, oh, yes, we need this. I don't know.
Yeah. I know I was pretty surprised when I saw the numbers myself, and you know, I think collectors have done a great job launching the program. So I'm not sure if it's a lack of like there's not enough volume being generated, or if folks don't want to pay for an extra service, or if they'd rather take it and drop it off places. I mean, there are a lot of
Is the county
questions.
Doing anything in your newsletters that go out about the program?
I think
Rick might maybe be able to answer that.
Yeah,
I haven't seen anything in that about that. Of course, I'm in rural.
Yeah, I can't speak to that piece.
Yeah, we have it on our website, and we direct people to the website, but any direct advertising on that we have not done.
Seemed like that might be something to do.
Tennille has something.
I don't know if I can comment, but not all cities have told Ridwell no. So the county said you're not able to operate in county because it's against county rules.
Right.
Not all cities have either come to the same conclusion about their rules or decided to go the extra step and actually outwardly enforce the rules. So that just plays in there somewhere as well. So we can't easily put out a countywide publication saying this is available everywhere, because if a city hasn't adopted the rates or told Ridwell no, it's just one of those things where county yes, but and some of the cities yes, but not all of the cities.
Understood. Yeah.
That's a good clarifying.
I think that not having it in the urban areas too was part of that equation as well. And some of those countywide communication goes to everybody in the entire county, and to say that it was available countywide wasn't exactly accurate, so we were struggling a little bit with how to get that communication out. We definitely, when people call, though, we refer them to the website often, and it's got great resources on there, and it really talks people through the program, and usually it's the call of, we would like our Ridwell, and we say, we've got a great option for you if you live in the urban area.
Okay. Kind of a mixed bag then. Thanks for that.
Is there an option, or we have the ability to poll or survey the rural and mountain areas to see what the interest would be? Or maybe it's just safe to assume it would be equal or less than urban?
Yeah, at this point, I think we've tried to keep the program within the urban area for density and collection efficiencies and that sort of thing. So we haven't had a discussion with the collectors about, expanding it out into the rural area.
Yeah.
And Mr. Chair, you may want to take up the business of the minutes, as Kate had suggested. So.
Yes, actually, I'm also at times. Forgive me for missing item number two. Would it be okay if I hand it over to Mr. Bill Potter, if he takes the minutes and I step away?
Sounds great. Thank you.
Okay.
We appreciate your time.
Thanks
for joining us. Thank you everyone for your time today.
Thank you.
Over to you, Bill.
Thanks, Chad. Question of the minutes of October 12th meeting, 2023. Is there any corrections? I have one correction, but is there anything for the other members? It's a really minor thing. It's almost nitpicky, but on the motion on the last page, it says that the motion, I made the motion and it was approved by a 6-0 vote, but there were only four members at that meeting.
Well,
thank you.
It's a good catch.
It just shows I read the minutes.
Mm-hmm. We will make that correction.
So we have, we did the recycling update on bulky waste program.
So in 2022, I think we talked about this once, but the state in the end of the legislative session provided $10 million to Metro for them to distribute for trash and sanitation services within the Metro District. And the county, and so they kind of open things up for, they use some of the money themselves for cleanup efforts, and then cities and counties also applied for grants through that opportunity. We submitted a grant for $300,000. The county in total. The majority of that grant was for RV removal and run by some other departments. And we submitted and received $95,000 for some bulky waste removal at multifamily communities and providing drop boxes and other cleanup services for houseless communities in their cleanups. And that was, part of the funds went to pay stipends to members of that community that helped kind of clean up their own space. So it was, a pretty positive program, and we've had several working with, primarily our work has been with Love One, Inc., that does a lot of services for the houseless community, and so we've worked with them both WM and B&B Leasing has participated in those because there have been cleanups in their areas, and we appreciate their help on those cleanups. And the bulky waste project, which was run primarily by Tennille and Sophie Richards, who you will be coming up here in a second. Sophie did the bulk of the work managing the project, and while the franchisees did the, you know, the heavy lifting at serving the communities and pulling the material out and getting it disposed. Sophie came to the county in September 21 through an AmeriCorps program and to help serve the multifamily communities, and she stayed on since that time in a temporary employee capacity and now in a limited duration capacity, and she's going to share the results of her bulky waste collection project.
Thanks, Rick. Should I stand up there?
You can. You can stand, sit, however you want to do it.
I'm going to stand.
Okay.
That's okay. Bring me my water. Okay.
Be upstairs.
Do you mind just clicking for me?
Absolutely. Just tell me when.
Try and signal. Okay, so yeah, as Rick mentioned, we did a bulky waste project with the funds that we got from Metro. And that started around October 2022, and it's actually still going, but the report just got published, and that just talks about October 22 to the end of December 23. So this presentation is just kind of on that data. Anything happening in 2024 is not included. Okay. So the project was designed to provide regularly occurring bulky waste service at multifamily communities, which is a service that's usually not offered. And the intent of the project was to generate data that would help inform a design and implement an effective future program. And the two main policies that this kind of has helped guiding towards is the 2030 Regional Waste Plan Action 10.5, which is just regularly occurring bulky waste service with an emphasis on lower income households. And then 5.15 of the Solid Waste Administrative Rule, which is just multifamily service standards must ensure provision of regularly occurring bulky waste service by July 25. So I'm sure a lot of you guys know what bulky waste is, but just for the purposes of this project, it's items that are too large to fit in the garbage bins. So it's usually furniture, appliances, tires, and things like that. And then with this project, we kind of separated all the communities into two different categories. There's participating communities where we were able to talk to property managers and get them on board, and we did outreach to residents. And then there's non-participating communities where either a property manager wouldn't respond to us, they declined to participate, or we just couldn't get a hold of anyone, or there isn't a property manager. So those communities were kind of lumped into two different categories. There was what we called stealth pickups, where the collectors would just collect any bulky waste they found on site in the parking lot near their enclosure, in their enclosure. If they didn't have stealth pickup, they were just removed entirely from the list. And yeah, that's it. Okay. So, look at that. So there were four main terms of the project. October to the end of November 2022, there were 40 communities that we invited to participate, and they were all the affordable housing communities within the metro boundary at the time. And that was through six franchise collectors. It was all just their regular garbage and recycling collector. And those we did loose items and drop boxes just to service. And then second term was February to the end of June of 23, almost the exact same communities. There was just a couple added and one taken away. Still affordable housing communities, same collectors, same system. And then term three was kind of like an additional term where we realized we had enough funding left over, so we added 10 more communities to the month of June. And then that had five collectors, but it's still kind of carrying over from June, so there were still six working with us. And those communities, because we had already invited the affordable housing ones, we got a list of all the communities in EFA zones, which is equity-focused areas, and then anyone with two or more were invited to participate. So there was 10. And then October to the end of December, we had, again, more funding left over, so we're like, okay, let's do it again. And we just went with two collectors this time just to kind of keep it easy, and there were other projects happening in other local jurisdictions, so not to kind of overburden anyone, we just went with two. And the criteria was a little different. It was for one collector, it was anyone where their communities had over 100 units, and then the other collector was just all their communities. There was only 20. So those are those. Collectively, there were 83 unique communities invited, 54 participating with a 65% participation rate, and the same participation rate when counting units, just by coincidence, 7,500 invited, 4,800 participating. Thank you. So the two different methods, which I kind of loosely mentioned, there was loose item collections. These were kind of intended for communities who had less than 100 units, and locations were usually in one parking spot, although not always. Sometimes they were just the only available parking or only available space here in someone's lawn. And they were collected weekly at almost all the time. Only a couple of times we did it once a month, just space constraints. But basically, like, if a collection was on Friday, we told the residents, put all your items out Thursday. The collector would go Friday morning, pick it up, and then the parking spot would be available for the rest of the week until next Thursday. And I will say those were serviced kind of by flatbeds, box trucks, and rear loaders, just kind of a variation, whatever the collector preferred. And then the other method was drop boxes, and these were for communities that had over 100 units, unless they preferred otherwise drop boxes. There was a few special cases. And they kind of were in 1 to 5 parking spots, depending on both the property size and how big of a container they wanted. Container sizes ranged from 10 yards, 20, 30, and 40, 20 being the most popular. And they were kind of just emptied emptied and returned back on site whenever they were full. And that was reported either by the regular garbage collector that would service their garbage, you know, weekly, or the property manager would reach out to me and let me know it's full, and I reach out to the collector, and there was definitely a mix of methods we went to kind of report them being full. So the process is pretty similar for all of the four terms. We started out just determining the communities and the method, and we kind of tried to approach everyone with a, like, hey, we think this would be the best way to do it at your community. And we coordinated the details with the collectors and the property managers, and there was a bit of back and forth just to kind of have some good collaboration and make sure everyone can kind of agree on the way we're going to do it. And then resident outreach, and this is just an example flyer that we came up with. So we post that on every door at the couple weeks, 1 to 2 weeks before the project started. As the term went on, we would just track and address any issues that come up. It was pretty simple, actually. And then a couple weeks prior to the term ending, we would put out flyers again, just reminding folks, hey, your opportunity is about to end. And then we'd provide suggestions on how to dispose of bulky waste when the opportunity is over. And then terms two and three, we actually did surveys to both the property managers and the residents just to kind of gather their thoughts and feedback and overall opinions on the project. So that was cool to do. And what we're doing now, too, is similar in format as well. It's always the same. So the data collection, for the loose items, we created these tracking sheets and we got the collectors to use them and we're very grateful for that. And so we were able to get item count, item category, size and weight, and we also monitor time on site or route time depending on the term. For term four, we were able to do entire route times because we had only to the two collectors with a pretty like refined process. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, terms one and three were just time on site, collecting and loading the items. And then drop boxes, we were able to get disposal weight and volume, and then throughout all the accumulated disposal slips, we could get duration between hauls and frequency. Next, thank you. So the results, these are all from the first four, just gonna be loose items. The vast majority of everything collected was small items under 75 pounds, just over 80%, with other being way farther than anything else, and then small furniture. And then it definitely peters out a lot from there. Medium items were just under 17%, and large and extra large barely made over 2% of items. And so that's everything over 150 pounds. Yeah, there's a lot there. We got a lot of really informative data. And I could go on, but I'm not gonna. So this is just looking at term four, and term four, all the communities invited didn't have prior opportunity for collection. So we look a lot at term four just because term two, they had the opportunity in term one. So it's a little harder to kind of analyze that data, but with properties kind of by the number of units on the bottom and then items disposed on the y-axis, properties with less than 50 units kind of disposed of 20 to 40 items in general, and then 100 to 150 units were about 60 to 80 items. And blue is participating, non-participating communities obviously still throw stuff away because people have stuff to throw away, but that was usually against the rules of their property and they weren't aware of the project, and I did. Can you go back just a second? Yeah. Sorry. It's okay if you can't. It's okay if you can't. Don't worry. Okay. Don't worry.
I can't.
Can you make that go away? I actually was able to get the equation from the participating communities too, which I found super kind of nerdy but interesting. In that, like, with an opportunity, the items kind of will start at 20. Items will start at 20 and go up around 2 items for every 1 unit. Yes, 2 items for every 1 unit. No. Can we move on? this looks at all the terms collectively, and we got averages kind of based on how many weeks the term was, and so we were able to kind of find how many items were disposed per week based on the property size. And green, including the yellow line, is participating communities, and for every week there's about 2 to 3 items for properties under 50 units, and then ones over 100 was about 4 to 5 items per week. But I will say that doesn't necessarily reflect how it actually went. Like, if the first week you have 20 items, then it kind of peters out for the next few. But overall, if you were to kind of extrapolate, you kind of base your findings on that. Next, please. Thank you. So looking at term 1 and 4, which term 1 had no prior opportunity and term 4 had no prior opportunity, different communities, but didn't have the opportunity. Participating communities dispose of almost 0.8 items per unit, which is about 3 items for every 4 units. And non-participating surprisingly had the same exact number, but 1 unit for every 1 item for every 5 units. Interesting coincidence. Next, please. And so for term 4, because we had the route time, we were able to plot that with the amount of items collected and for the amount of weeks. So we have item count on the far side, time on route time here, and then weeks just as you go across. And there was like a ton of variation, as you can see by this very complicated graph. But For the most part, item counts influence route time, but there was definitely some discrepancies and other things that happened where we don't know, but there were differences. And then differences in route time between collector varied a lot, and that's also to say collector B here had, I think, 12 properties. Collector A had 20, so undoubtedly there will be very different route times and item counts. And there's also different peaks in the amount of items that came, and I think that also might have to do with the when we were able to get them on board. There was some delays with properties responding and able to get them kind of like started in the project. So I think, if I remember correctly, Collector A kind of was a lot of the most people, a lot, words, in the middle was when we were able to get everybody on board for one collector, and then Collector B, because there was only 11 properties, they were a lot easier and a lot more local, so closer at least to here, so I can visit them. It's always easier when you can visit someone on site and kind of talk through the details. It's a little daunting when you send an email and you're like, hi, look at this really cool project we're doing. Okay. So anyway, a lot of differences, but we could kind of see somewhat of a correlation between item counts and route time. So then looking at Dropbox disposal, there was a wide variety of results, as indicated in this graph. 20 yards were the most popular and definitely had a really wide spread, but for the most part, the average weight kind of fell between half a ton and one ton. 30 yards, you can kind of see it go up as the size of the Dropbox goes up, but 30 yards, yeah, we're kind of around one, one and a half. And 40 yards around one and a half, 2 tons. Next, please. And then averaged out, keep it simple, we actually see that exact relationship, a positive relationship between Dropbox size and disposal volume and days between hauls. So 20 yards could go, almost had 3/4 of a ton on average per haul and could go around 2 weeks. 30 yards also went around 2 weeks but had more in the box, about a little over 1 ton. And 40 yards had almost a ton and a half and could go almost 17 days between hauls. So it does kind of indicate that there is some benefits that could be made from using larger containers when space allows, save time, route efficiencies, and stuff. Thanks, please. So overall, until this, just up to 2023, loose items collected just under 83 tons, and drop boxes were 62 and a half tons, collectively 154 tons, which is a ton. It's so much. This project was like so much fun to run and to just do and see all the accumulated thing, and like huge thanks to the collectors because this could not have happened otherwise. Next week. So when we did surveys to all the properties and to residents as well, we got so much positive feedback. Everyone was like, this was the best thing ever. But property managers, the biggest value that they said was convenience, items only placed in designated areas, resident appreciation, then monetary benefit followed. And yeah, 10 out of 10, meaning we surveyed 10 property managers. And yeah, everyone, a lot of people, a lot of the same comments. Everything went well, regular service, smooth sailing. It was awesome. Next, please. And half the properties experienced a reduction in time spent, and I think the other half indicated it was the same amount of time, but no properties indicated more time managing bulky waste. Next, please. And 80% indicated the amount was more than their typical amount, and this property usually has little to zero. This is a lot more than that. So, yeah, I think that was very clearly demonstrated that providing the opportunity definitely creates more weight. Like, you get more out of it when you tell people you can do it. And, yeah, we just have some quotes like, oh, this was a breeze, and it was so awesome, and they got rid of a ton. Always a ton. Next one. And I didn't write that. And then, so when we surveyed residents, we surveyed the residents from the properties that did the survey. So they all indicated that we could survey their residents. So we created flyers with a QR code, a phone number, and a URL link to just make it as accessible as possible. And then, yeah, compile them all in a Google survey form sheet thing. And, yeah, the biggest value, very similar to what the property managers reported, was added convenience, monetary, and only placed in the designated areas, kind of meaning that bulky waste isn't in their enclosure anymore, or it's not blocking their bins, or it's not in a parking spot, or all that stuff. And I was actually impressed how many times people just qualitatively said, oh, I can access my garbage now, and my bins aren't blocked. And it was, that's crazy. Yeah, the sheer fact that people had somewhere to dispose of their stuff was helpful, and transportation was a really big factor for a lot of people, and so providing the access on site to dispose of your stuff, I think, was a really big hurdle that people could kind of step over. And yeah, just under half indicated that they'd actually prefer the cost to be included in their regular garbage bill, which means that they would be okay with paying for it. And then 17 out of 50 said they want management to cover the cost. And I don't know, and I never will know, how much them being affordable homes had to factor into that. But considering that a lot of them were willing to pay and they still were affordable housing, I don't think it's that big of a hurdle for a lot of people. I think they're willing to do it if they can. Thanks. And yeah, just a bunch of quotes. Sorry for the spam. But yeah, people were really excited. Oh, I think I already said that one. But yeah, someone, I talked on the phone with this guy. He's like, I've been living here for 12 years. I've never had this opportunity before. And it's awesome. And he said he would want to buy in once or twice a year. Giving people the space to dispose of them was great, and it cut down on illegal dumping, went long enough, and it did go a long time, but people could definitely take advantage of the opportunity, and the trash apartment, the trash area was easier to use. So that's it. That's all I got. But it was awesome, and a huge thank you to all the collectors and to Rick and Tennille for also letting me kind of run this project. It was a lot of fun and really rewarding.
Awesome. Taking questions.
Thank you. Sorry?
Are you taking questions?
I'll take questions, sure.
I have one. Is the sites where these placed, is there always supervision? Or people can just come and go? Somebody looking to see what's dumping, I guess, to put it simply.
Sorry, do you mind rephrasing that?
That was kind of complicated, yeah. I'm thinking of these sites where the people can come and put this stuff. Mm-hmm. Is somebody watching to see what goes in all the time? Is there supervision on site?
Oh, for like what the tenants are putting out?
Yeah, or anybody that could drive in and put it in there, or does it?
Yeah, definitely. So a lot of maintenance people were pretty diligent about looking and cleaning up the pile. And when we went and coordinated all the locations with properties and collectors, we tried to pick spots that were out of the public eye to just kind of cut down on outside people dumping their stuff. I did hear a couple of properties had that happen, but usually it wasn't that big of an issue. And there, a lot of the times with drop boxes, they were really hard to monitor. Like some stuff ended up in the drop boxes that wasn't bulky waste, or what we wouldn't define as bulky waste. And so those were kind of hard. We couldn't really do much. But when they were loose item pickups, it's a little easier to kind of correct those small items. Like someone could throw them in the garbage, or there was just kind of more eyes on those loose items. And because it was only one day out of the week, I think it was just more streamlined. I don't know what about it exactly, but there was less unallowed items in the loose item collections than the drop boxes. Does that answer your question?
It does, but I have a follow-up question on that. Now, the haulers that have, I don't know if they volunteered to do this, or if there's some kind of contractual arrangement, but it dawns on me that there's probably a number of things that can be recycled and reused in those boxes.
Definitely.
What's happening to that? Is it going to the dump, or is somebody going through that stuff?
A little bit of both, but for the most part, it all just went to the garbage. We didn't have the capacity to kind of bring in reuse, but we considered it for sure, and we wanted to. I definitely wanted to, but like logistic-wise, it was very hard to kind of figure out. But I did hear from residents and property managers that they would glean from the pile, especially the loose item ones, and those were usually their favorite days of the week because they got to look through piles of other people's stuff. And also at the drop boxes, some people did put reusable stuff outside of the drop box just to kind of give it another opportunity before it got thrown away.
And just mention the e-cycles and
Oh, yeah, thank you. Yeah, we also did collect e-cycles and like white goods outside of the garbage, outside of the dump drop boxes.
How about HHW?
E-cycles.
Well, talking about household hazardous waste, and that people will be people.
Yeah.
I'm thinking even paint that should go to paint care and pesticides, that kind of thing. People sneak in there in the dark and put them in.
Yeah, I do know a couple properties. I know one property found sharps in a container, so the property was able to kind of take care of that. And then at another property, actually, they used the opportunity to do a paint collection event, and so their maintenance collected paint outside of the container and then would bring that to paint care locations. So it kind of prompted other kind of spin-off ideas as well. But we ourselves didn't really involve hazardous waste materials, and nor did we accept.
I don't want to take everybody's time up, but questions.
Cool. Thanks. Any more questions?
I'm curious, sure. You know, in general, with some of maybe complaints, was there any data collected or feedback for, you know, when items are placed out in large areas, you know, larger groups, units, it may bring uninvited guests to the property and pose a risk to people that live in the units, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Was there any feedback from the property managers on unwanted guests essentially on the property that shouldn't have been there?
I think there was one property specifically that I heard that, and we ended the opportunity for them. We kind of all agreed to just end it because it was inviting. It was in a questionable area where there's a lot of people living in RVs and out of their cars, and so yeah, they were really prone to illegal dumping already, and then we were kind of willing to risk it for the project. We want to just try it out and see what happens. It was a huge community with almost 400 units. But yeah, that one did have some outside people come in and kind of mess it up for everyone and put stuff in the container that wasn't bulky items. And I think largely because they didn't, like, they weren't told it was for bulky, and so they just were like, oh, it's a garbage container that I sort of indirectly have access to. So they just threw whatever in. So that was one, and the only other issue really was sometimes kids would mess with the drop boxes and pull stuff out, as that's what I heard reported a couple times, but it wasn't really as bad as just the one that was bad, but it was just that one.
Thank you.
Yeah. Great. Is that all?
Thank you, Sophie.
Thank you very much.
Next item on the agenda is general updates. I don't know what that's supposed to mean, but...
Well, we don't. I think we've done all the updates we're going to do today, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Is there any other comments from the commissioners? If not, do I hear a motion to adjourn?
I'll move to adjourn.
Carol, thank you. Second?
I can second that.
Okay. Good. All in favor?
Aye.
All in favor. Have a good day. I'm going to go out and celebrate tonight.
All right. Thank you all very much.